Good morning. Thank you so much for coming back. You know, this is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. The Alzheimer's Association is encouraging everyone to learn the truth about Alzheimer's, including the fact that it's more than memory loss. Caregiving can become anyone's reality, and that risk vary among different populations, among others, and dispel other harmful misconceptions that keep people from seeking a diagnosis and reduce access to needed resources and support. And Ruth Drew is here, Director of Family and Information Services at the Alzheimer's Association. Good morning to you, Ruth.
Good morning, Twanda.
First of all, talk about early diagnosis. We talk about early diagnosis, but what should we be looking for? What are some of the signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We know that everyone who has a brain is at risk for Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. So it's so important for us to know what the warning signs are. And of course, they include memory loss that affects everyday life. Typically, we see short-term memory loss in the early stage of the disease, but they also include difficulty with planning and problem solving, having problems completing familiar tasks, things that used to be easy that become much more difficult and much more time-consuming, confusion to time and place, misplacing things, mm-hmm. and then having trouble retracing your steps. We can all misplace something, but then when we find it, we're like, oh, that's right, I put my keys down because the phone was ringing when I came in the door, whereas a person with Alzheimer's might find the keys by the phone and say, how did they get there? And not remember, not be able to retrace their steps. There can be changes in mood and personality. Sometimes people withdraw from social activities that they used to enjoy. And if you're listening to this list, you might be thinking, well, these could be warning signs of a lot of different things, and you'd be right. So you can get a complete list of the warning signs of Alzheimer's on our website at alz.org. But that's why it's so important to get a diagnosis and really know what you're dealing with.
You know, most of us think, oh, well, mom and dad, they're getting old and certainly they'll forget things. But there is a difference, right?
There's a big difference between normal aging mm-hmm. and Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is not normal aging. It is a fatal, progressive brain disease that attacks the brain and destroys not only our ability to remember, but also to process information, to problem solve. It affects our personality, and eventually it affects our ability to function.
That's right. We went through a personal issue with that my mom's best friend. And, you know, my mom noticed it before her kids noticed it because they spent more time together. But she would call and say, I left my purse in your car. And my mom be like, you weren't in the car with me today. You know, well, I can't find. And she'll call her and just say strange things. So I say, Mom, that doesn't sound like dementia, you know, regular dementia. Call her kids and tell them that they need to get her to a doctor. And sure enough, she had an advanced stage of Alzheimer's, and it went very quickly.
Well, that's a shame. It's a really devastating disease, and it impacts individuals and their families so greatly. Mm-hmm. We know that, for example, caregivers last year provided more than 18 billion hours of unpaid care.
Oof.
So, and taxpayers are paying more than $18 million every hour for the cost of Alzheimer's disease. So this is a disease that is impacting all of us, especially the families that are dealing with it.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, when you look at that and you look at somebody in your family that has it and has passed on, what do you do, the people who are left who are members of the family, you know, in that direct line? What should the family members be doing? Because I know that I have a friend of mine, a guy, he's really nervous because he thinks I'm going to have Alzheimer's like my mother.
Well, everyone can get involved. We can all do something. And so that's why we recommend people go to ALZ.org or follow us on social media and find out what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that they're doing are sharing their story, raising awareness, an issue. Some people involved in some of our activities, like this month, on June 20th, we have the longest day on the summer solstice. Mm. We have a variety of activities going on across the country where people are raising awareness, raising funds, and also honoring people with the disease and caregivers for whom every day is the longest day.
That's amazing. So, of course, they can go to ALZ.org for more information, right?
That's right.
So Ruth, what about cure research? What's going on with that? Is there something? Is there a cure? Is a cure on the horizon? Is there something that can slow it down, slow the progression down?
Currently, the medications that are available help with symptoms. So they're worth looking into if a person has the disease, but they do not slow down the disease, prevent the disease, or cure the disease. And that's really what we need, right? So there are many different clinical trials that are currently in place. The research front is really exciting, but we are not there yet. We have a long way to go. And that's why we believe research funding is so important, so that we can get the kinds of disease-modifying medications and treatments that can really stem the tide of this disease.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're reading more and more about people younger and younger with this disease.
That's right. There are people in their 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. and early 60s with Alzheimer's. That is much more rare. The majority of people are 65 and older, and certainly the older we get, the greater our risk is for getting a disease like Alzheimer's.
That's amazing. Make sure that you get more information about the longest day, which is June 20th, Monday, June 20th. Go to ALZ.org. That's the Alzheimer's Association. Anything else we really need to know, Ruth?
Absolutely. If you're dealing with Alzheimer's yourself or in your family, it's so important to know that nobody should have to go through this alone, and you don't have to. That's where the Alzheimer's Association comes in. We're available 24 hours a day. You can reach us on our website, but also on our 24-hour helpline at 1-800-272-3900. We're available to connect with you, help you get the information, the support, and the resources that you need.
Phenomenal. So many people are caregivers today. And, you know, one thing that we always stress is that the caregivers need some caregivers. Sometimes they need some care. So it's a very difficult thing.
That's right. No one should do this alone. And there's lots of help and support available.
Absolutely. Ruth Drew, Director of Family and Information Services at the Alzheimer's Association. ALZ.org is where you need to go for more information. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Twanda.
Good morning, and thank you for coming back to the show. I'm Twanda Black, your host. You know, 26 million Americans suffer from asthma. I'm actually one of those, and up to 10% have severe asthma. Emerging science is now helping doctors better understand one of the causes of severe asthma in a specific set of patients. It's important for people living with asthma to understand what kind of asthma they have in order to manage it. And joining us this morning, Dr. Mark Forshag, a pulmonologist with GlaxoSmithKline, and Donna Matlock. She is a severe asthma patient and president of the Severe Asthma Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Thank you for joining us. Dr. Forshag, first of all, didn't know there were certain types of asthma. I know I have seasonal asthma, so mine pops out every now and again. So talk about those different types of asthma.
So there are a number of ways to classify asthma, and so you may hear different terms, and more than one term may apply to a given patient. So you can classify it based on severity from mild to severe, mm-hmm. and even milder than mild is just intermittent, something that only occurs every once in a while.
Right.
You can classify it by its triggers, like you have seasonal, which is probably allergic, mm-hmm. or exercise-induced or aspirin-induced, for example. And you can also classify it by the form of underlying inflammation going on in the lung.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, it's kind of funny because I didn't grow up with asthma, never had asthma, 35 years old, and I walked into the doctor's office. And I was like, I can't breathe. Just give me something. I got work to do, you know. And they were like, you got asthma. And I was like, I don't have asthma. I've never had asthma. I'm 35 years old. I don't have asthma. So, you know, apparently it can happen at any time.
Well, that's true. And I think Donna's onset was, you know, not in childhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Donna, tell us about your story.
Absolutely. Mine was later on in life. And it just automatically, I had mild asthma, and just like it just turned. All of a sudden, it turned into severe asthma, but I really didn't know what it was because I thought all asthma was the same.
Mm-hmm.
And despite the many combinations and therapies my physicians had given me, my asthma was progressively becoming worse, my symptoms. And, I could no longer use my inhaler or, you know, my inhaler and my nebulizer combination to control it. I was unable to do the things that I normally did every day, and I became homebound, actually, for periods of time because it was so severe, and I didn't know, when an attack would occur or if I'd have to be hospitalized. So, you know, that's when I knew that this was not just asthma, you know.
So when you say not just asthma, then what are the other things that go along with that?
With having severe asthma,
mm-hmm.
You're unable to do the things that every day, like, you know, walking.
Mm-hmm.
Even talking on the phone would provoke an asthmatism, or bending over and tying my shoes. My husband and I were and still are very active, but we couldn't do the things like traveling that everybody likes to do,
mm-hmm.
or we used to take dancing lessons. Progressively worse to the point where I couldn't even walk by myself.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So how long, you know, from the point of this is not normal to finding a physician and the diagnosis before you were able to begin to deal with it?
Well, it took several years for me because most physicians kept on, you know, medicating me.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't sure what I had, what this was. They knew it was asthma, but it was kind of foreign to them that this was as severe as it was. So I took many medications, and it took several years and several physicians and specialists. And I like to say that, you know, if there's a physician that ended with an ist, I was there. We tried everything. I left no stone unturned. And, you know, I just became my own advocate.
Right.
My husband and I searched, and we finally got results.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Forshak, tell us about, you know, her process of going through that. So for those of us who don't want to go through 10 doctors in 2 years, you know, who should we go see? What should we be looking for in a physician?
So once you get the diagnosis of asthma, you know, if you have intermittent symptoms, a couple days, a month, you know, it's probably just fine to see your primary care doctor.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having more frequent symptoms than that, though, it probably is worthwhile to see an allergist or a pulmonologist, both of whom have special expertise in treating asthma.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing about seeing 10 physicians is that if you have particularly severe asthma, one thing to keep in mind is that even the best doctor, it'll take them months, maybe even a couple years, to find the right combinations of medicines in that very severe patient to get them under control. It's not something where, you know, they will give you a medicine and you'll feel better 2 days later.
Right.
It's a process in severe asthma of rooting out the underlying causes and picking the right medicine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now, any, you know, indications of who would get severe asthma?
So it is more common in people who have onset in middle age rather than in youth. The asthma that occurs in youth tends to have a better prognosis. It's more associated with allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And those two characteristics tend to predict a better prognosis. People who have onset in middle age, particularly when it's severe at the very beginning, tend to have a worse prognosis. It tends to be a little more common in women, tends to be a little bit more common in the obese. It's something that has to be really attended to. Now, having said that, the majority of people who have asthma, 90%, will not have severe asthma, mm-hmm. and will do well with standard medical therapy.
So talk about this one and the role of the white blood cells.
So one of the things we're starting to learn is that different parts of the immune system can be the predominant bad guy, as it were, in a given patient's asthma. We talked about dividing asthma by severity or by the type of triggers you have. Mm-hmm. Now we're starting to realize that the cells in the immune system, cells like the eosinophil, the intrinsic lymphoid cell, the neutrophil, can have a predominant negative role in a given patient, and that we believe now that therapy directed towards the specific type of inflammation in a given patient may get you to a better result faster than just trying, you know, the same medications in all patients.
So what is the role of that white blood cell when you talk about that? What is it supposed to do?
So that's a really good question, and everybody thinks the term inflammation. Inflammation is bad. You actually need inflammation to fight off infections and to heal wounds. Mm-hmm. It's just when it gets excessive or inappropriate in its timing that it becomes a problem. The eosinophil is an important cell for fighting off parasitic infections. Mm-hmm. It may have roles in other types of infections or even in malignancy, but it's not a cell that is useful to the same degree as it was probably in the past when we encountered more parasites in our day-to-day life, mm-hmm. Before society advanced and public health measures came into effect.
Right.
But it still plays an important role, also in allergy. And, it's not that it's a bad cell. It's that it is acting inappropriately in a given patient who has asthma with eosinophilic inflammation.
So it's just cutting up in there. Okay.
It's just cutting up.
So talk about the treatment for someone with severe asthma. I mean, I'm sure it's varied and it depends on the patient. Mm-hmm. But in general, what would be that treatment?
So that's really what has been changing. You know, up till now, including now, for the most part, we have what's called step therapy, mm-hmm. where a patient starts on a short-acting rescue medicine, and if that's not enough, then you add an inhaled corticosteroid or a long-acting beta agonist. And pretty much we treat all patients the same. Now, as time has gone by and we've realized that there are different subtypes of asthma, we're starting to individualize therapy more.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone with severe allergies, it might involve allergy shots or desensitization to allergens in the environment. And in some patients, we recognize that inhaled steroids and even sometimes oral steroids may be important. And eosinophilic inflammation tends to respond well to oral or inhaled corticosteroids.
Mm.
But in the most severe patients, what we're now starting to look at are biological therapies. And these are antibodies that are designed to attack different mediators in the inflammatory process and try to shut it down. And in that case, you really need to match the right antibody to the mm-hmm. right type of inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Where can folks go to get more information on severe asthma?
Well, there's a wonderful site. It's very simple. It's asthma.com, asthma.com. Mm-hmm. It's very user-friendly, and it will also give you links to other sites that may be helpful as well.
Well, thank you so much for this great information, Dr. Mark Forshag, and, of course, Donna Matlock. Thank you for sharing your story, Donna.
Thank you so much for having us and giving us this opportunity. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Tawanda.
Mm-hmm.